You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
Hey, and welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. We're here to smoke cigars and talk about nerdy stuff. So what are we smoking this week, Brad?
This week we are smoking the Raymond Alons Heritage Series 660.
Yeah, I'm a new one by Foundry Tobacco Company, which, looking at a lot of their boxes and stuff, they got some serious steampunky looking shit in their portfolio. And as Brad, relights his cigar, so I'm going to talk to myself for a minute. The Raymond Alons is based off an old, it's a kind of a tribute to an old Cuban brand. Raymond Alons was an old Cuban brand of cigars from back in the day. This new blend by Foundry has a Ecuadorian Sumatra Oscuro wrapper surrounding bold Nicaraguan binder and filter, all blended together to produce a beautifully rich, bold flavors and well-constructed medium cigar.
Yeah, and I gotta say, once I've got the cigar relit now, I'm having a little bit of an issue keeping this one lit for some reason, but
it's definitely got a real tight construction to it. Yeah. Like, if you squeeze it, there's not a whole lot of give to it. It's
I mean, it's wound very tight.
Yeah, it's definitely not a solid construction.
But it's not so tight that you can't get a good draw on the cigar. I mean, I'm getting definitely a full mouthful of smoke. I mean, the draw is very easy, so, it's not overly wrapped.
It's just a matter of getting it started. That and has a closed foot, too. So sometimes if you just get that outer tobacco lit and you don't have the inner tobacco lit, it'll go out on you. So, make sure you've got a good light on it before you go to puffing, or you're going to be relighting like we just did.
Yeah, absolutely. So, with this, even being a medium, the flavor profile is very complex. And, I'm actually getting just a touch of spice on the cigar, too. So, I mean, it is definitely, I think, bold is a good statement. It's not like some of the other medium cigars that we reviewed where it was just kind of lacking in punch. I mean, this has got a definite punch, but it just doesn't have that full-bodied, strength to it.
Yeah, I'm definitely not getting that kick in the teeth with a strong cigar, but it's definitely got a lot of flavor, and it's, very smoky. I mean, like I said, just big, thick clouds of smoke from this thing.
Yeah, and talking about the construction, I got to say, it's very well constructed. I mean, the wrapper is smooth. I don't see any big veins. There's no cracks, no, defects or anything. So, I mean, that's one of the things that I really like about Foundry cigars.
He just likes big veiny things.
Damn it. Yes, I set myself up for that one, I suppose.
Yeah, and with this and also the Boulevard they just released, a good price point, too. They're not that expensive. You can get some of the smaller sizes for, $650 up to, the big size is still only, around the $750 mark.
Well, I mean, this is a pretty good smoke, and I mean, I'm just looking on the web, and at about the $80, $90 price range for a box of, 26 by 60 cigars, that's very budget-friendly, in my opinion. I'm used to paying well more than double that amount. So, I don't know. I mean, this is a cigar that would be great just to restock your humidor with a good quality smoke. And it's not, overpowering. It's not, even the aroma. It's got a very good aroma to it. So, I don't know. I mean, this is something that I would, enjoy having in my humidor to go and grab a handful of from time to time.
Yeah, these are not a bad cigars. I'm interested to see how it plays out over the course of the show. And this one came recommended. This is a Norm pick this week. So, hasn't stirred me wrong yet. He hasn't talked me into trying one of those Trader Vics, so.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I see a $2 price point and I get really scared.
I'm tempted to try one just to see if it is because somebody's buying them, because like they were restocking the box the other day, so they sell. I've just never been able to bring myself to
buy
$2.
They sell to broke-ass college kids that can't afford to, you know, pay more than $2 and are going to leave 3/4 of a cigar still sitting in the ashtray that's never going to get smoked anyway.
I think I'm just going to try one just for shits and get, just to give a review of how bad it is, if it is bad.
So
it's going to be completely surprising if it turns out to be an awesome cigar.
Next podcast episode, are we going to do the Trader Jack?
I don't think we should do a whole podcast on it, but I'll smoke it on my off day and let you know if it sucks or not.
Perfect. Well,
I don't want a picture of that thing on our website. So I don't want to use it for a podcast. People are like, what the hell, these guys smoke that?
I mean, I just got to throw it out there, though, that the Rayman Alones, if you see it in your local shop, go ahead, pick one up, try it. Let us know your feedback. You know, for me, very budget-friendly, an enjoyable smoke. I'm tempted to pick it up again.
And speaking of people that can afford an expensive smoke, Batman. Batman v Superman just came out, and so far reviews are mixed. We'll get into that later in Nerd News. But if you really want to see a good Batman Superman movie, this week's episode is all about the top 10 list of animated DC movies. So with that, stay tuned. Time to go to the Batcave, slide down the Batpole, talk about some animated Batman Superman movies.
Yes, you know, God, I don't understand why the like actual live action DC movies can't be anywhere near as badass as what the animated series have been.
Yes, I mean,
like I'm looking at this. How can you know the adult themes in the cartoons and everything not carry over into the movies?
Yeah, because, I mean, the Batman movies have been watchable. The first two Dark Knights, third one was a little wonky. The old Batman movies have all been good. Even going way back to the Christopher Reeves Superman movies, those were, at least the first couple, were good movies. But this modern version of the DCU, or the DCEU, whatever the fuck they call it, is just horrible. They've got some things coming out now that I'm actually wanting to see, and like I said, we'll talk about that when we get to Nerd News, but their animated division and their television division have been knocking it out the park for years.
Yes.
But their cinematic versions just can't do it. I mean,
what do you think it is? Do you think they're afraid of the, you know, potential PG-13 or R rating?
There's that, and then there's also, I mean, they're seeing what Marvel's doing, and they're like, we want to copy it, but we don't want to go down the same formula they're using. So we want to be the darker, edgier alternative.
But they're not. Like, I mean, you say darker and edgier, but it's not. Yes, well, the actual shots in Gotham are dark. That is the darkness.
Like, maybe darker is not the right word. Grittier. Like, you know, freaking real world. You know, they try to ground it in the real world instead of going into a comic book world.
But, I mean, even then, like, all you end up with is, you know, okay, this person's psychotic. Crap. Like, they don't actually, you know, I can't take this person seriously as a villain. Like, you know, yeah. I think this person's batshit crazy. I'm going to put a bullet between their eyes. That's the end of your bad guy.
That, too, and with Marvel is not afraid to let people who write comics write their TV shows and stuff. The people who are making these things are fans of the property, whereas it seems like the people doing the DC stuff are straight Hollywood people and not people who are involved in Superman, Batman, Justice League, all that stuff. And then they also want to keep, instead of trying to mix their world, they're like, nope, the comic books are one thing, the TV shows are one universe, the cartoons are one universe, the movies are one universe, and we don't want to let these people interact. I mean, if they had the people writing that are writing and directing the current DC television stuff write their movies, maybe they wouldn't suck so bad.
Yeah, well, you know, and we'll get into this in news, but, you know, I've got hopes that this is going to be kind of changing and they're going to switch that formula up, but I'm not convinced that it's going to carry, you know, be an ongoing continuation, I guess. It just, you know, I'm with you, you know, there's so many iconic characters that, you know, I just feel like they're missing out on the potential. I mean, yeah. Like you said, I've always enjoyed the comics. I've enjoyed the animated series, like, but by the time it makes it to a live action, it doesn't feel the same. The characters don't interact the same, and, you know, I think they've got a serious, you know, marketing issue on their hands because it's by and large not what the fans want nor appreciate. Yeah.
And I think it's also like a rights issue because right now Disney owns everything. They own Marvel the comic, they own Marvel Studios, and they even own ABC, which produces most of their TV shows. So they're allowed to move writers, directors throughout the net, you know, the universe, but with, I don't know if the TV is separate from the cinematic and those two can't cooperate, but yeah, they need to learn something from their TV counterparts because the movie guys aren't doing it. But enough about that. And like I said, we'll probably open that can of worms later in the show. Let's talk about some good DC stuff. So if you're like, I don't know about seeing Superman versus Batman or whatever, Batman v Superman,
don't do it.
I want to watch something good. So here we are. We're going to talk about the animated DC universe.
Yeah, this is going to be a rundown of our top 10 favorites, you know, whether it be, you know, some of the series or whether it be some of the, you know, full-length animated films that have come out. You know, we're
We've done some hard research and looked at some, you know, the popular stuff on the net, other people's top 10 lists, our own kind of discussion, and the DC Animated Universe, they have made 24 feature-length movies. And out of those 24, we've narrowed it down to what we consider our top 10. May agree with us, may not agree with us, but generally speaking, these 10 movies show up on everybody's top 10 list. So the order may be different, but I think you're going to agree with what we rated here. But let's talk about where this came from a minute. We would not have this popular DC animated universe if it wasn't for the DC animation of the 90s, specifically Batman the Animated Series and eventually Superman the Animated Series and Justice League.
Yes, and I was a big fan of the Batman Animated Series. For some reason, Superman has just never really appealed to me. I don't know what it, like, even the comics. Superman is not a character that I necessarily relate to or go gaga over, but I really like a lot of the Justice League stuff too. So, you know, kind of that whole team, I guess, you know, that's, you know, essentially, you know, I guess DC's equivalent of the Avengers or something. But I like the team aspect and the characters interacting, because I feel like oftentimes too much character development is spent, and you know, you get 3 hours of this one person, and I'm like, hell no, that should have been an hour at most.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been a huge Superman fan, just because, I mean, Superman most of the time is just the goody two shoes Boy Scout. But then also, if someone's all powerful, you know they're going to pretty much win. I mean, to me, there's not really any drama involved in Superman, because with Batman, he's human. That dude can, you know, screw up and catch a bullet to the face, and he's not going to make it. So there's, you know, of course, you know, Batman's going to win, but you can suspend some of that disbelief, and you know, there's more drama involved in a Batman story than a Superman story. You know, he's almost too powerful, unless Batman whoops his ass.
I don't know. Just stay away from that kryptonite. So, yeah. Can we agree that, you know, Three Doors Down did the song back in, I guess, maybe the 90s, maybe it was the early 2000s, Kryptonite? You think that is Superman's least favorite song ever?
Damn. But yeah, the Batman the Animated Series from the 90s is so good. I mean, I recently went back and rewatched most of that, and the writing is amazing. I mean, that's why some of these, you know, movies are so good, because the stuff that Bruce Timm and them started back then is just, I mean, better written than the stuff that's going on the big screen.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't want this to turn into an absolute, you know, suck fest or anything, or like to absolutely just bash on DC, but I just, the live films just don't do it for me a lot of times, especially talking about a Superman or something. Like, it's not my cup of tea.
All right, well then talk about the animated series. That's what we're here for.
But the
quit your bitching.
Yep. So I don't know. I mean, I guess it's the visuals, it's the scripting, and the animated series and stuff focused on some of those darker elements and more, you know, adult themes, and it wasn't necessarily kid friendly, which, you know, I don't know, maybe that added a sense of taboo or something. But
I mean, stuff like the Heart of Ice, I mean, with Victor Freeze, you cared about the bad guys. You could understand like why they were doing what they were doing. I mean, there was, yeah, they kind of showed the downfalls of how these people became who they were instead of just a monster of the week. And a lot of stuff, you don't get that much background on a character. And Kevin Conroy, I mean, he is the voice of Batman. Out of all the versions of Batman, I think Kevin Conroy is probably everyone's.
Most memorable.
Yeah, when I read the comic books, that's the voice in my head when I'm reading Batman dialogue. It's Kevin Conroy.
Yes. You know, I don't know. I'm very much the same way. Like, and I don't know. I guess that's one of the things that I really like about, you know, the series is you hear those iconic voices. I mean, that's from my childhood. So with that, given the character development and everything to that extent, that's what makes the series enjoyable.
And Mark Hamill's Joker, too. That's, I mean, him and Conroy together through the TV series to the Arkham video games, I mean, that is the quintessential Joker, second only to maybe Heath Ledger.
Yeah, I mean, I am, you know, the new Jared Leto Joker, all that does to me is...
You mean Insane Clown Posse Joker?
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, you got Juggalo Joker, and, like, Joker always kind of had an iconic quip behind him.
Yeah.
And with, you know, Jared Leto, like, no, dude's just batshit crazy. Like, it doesn't really have that same feel, the rhyme, the reason, or anything. Like, you know, with Mark Hamill, and, you know, like you said...
Yeah, Mark Hamill is creepy and psychotic and intimidating. I mean,
that's the thing.
He's making jokes and doing funny, but there's that underlying menace in everything he says. Even when he's telling a joke, it's almost a threat.
Yes. Like, that's the guy you don't want to fuck with. Like, and that's I guess that's my major beef is Yeah, I mean, the I don't know. I guess for me, I don't get that menacing threat, you know, from a lot of the live action stuff.
And then, you know, after Batman, you know, wrapped up, we had the Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, which still had Kevin Conroy as Batman, and also the Superman in a lot of the, in those early DC animated stuff. Tim Daly from Wings. It's so weird that that's the voice behind Superman, but he did a great job as Superman in those series, and just the you know, out of all the Justice League, him and Batman were like the leaders, you know, the angel and the devil on your shoulder, and just the back and forth of those two where they kind of didn't get along. You know, Superman doesn't like Batman's methods, and Batman thinks Superman's too much of a goody two shoes, but they respected each other and gave each other shit. So it was kind of like a weird buddy cop relationship they had in those series.
Minus some of the buddiness. Like, I'm going to tolerate you just because at the end of the day we're both fighting bad guys, but I don't necessarily have to like you.
But they always had each other's back.
Yeah.
I mean,
so there was at least that level of respect.
Yeah. And another one of my favorites of those old anime is the Batman Beyond series, which was old Batman.
Yes, and seeing the old Batman is just awesome. I love that
and
dynamic.
And it's still Kevin Conroy as the old Batman teaching the kid. I think one of my favorite episodes is there's one where they're trying to steal his company from him. So they place this speaker in his head, make Bruce Wayne hear voices, and try to convince him that he's going crazy. And the only one who believes him is Batman, the kid he's training. And at the end of it all, they find, you know, when they defeat the bad guys, he's like, all this time you were hearing voices that no one else could hear. How did you not think you were going crazy? Did you ever like start to think that maybe you are insane? He's like, nope. He's like, wow. He's like, well, because the voice in my head kept calling me Bruce Wayne. He's like, yeah? He's like, that's not what I call myself in my head. And then he's like, he goes into the Batman voice. He's like, but that's my name now. And he just looks at him and goes, sure, kid, keep telling yourself that. Yes. I was like, that is the greatest line.
I don't know. I'm almost seeing some like Deadpool ripoffs there.
Oh, and they're even, like I said, there's some more modern stuff, and you can get it all on Netflix. One of my favorite of the newer, because I didn't watch a lot of the later Batman series, but the how was it? Young Justice. There's two seasons on Netflix that are absolutely amazing. I mean, it harkens back to the old Justice League. It's a lot darker storyline than some of the other animated stuff. So that's one I highly recommend you checking out. But let's get into our feature films list.
Absolutely. So up first, you know, is Batman Under the Red Hood.
No. That's how you do a count, and then you start at 10, and you go to 1.
Oh, shit. All right, fine. Let's start at number 10. Let's start with Wonder Woman. So this was from 2009, a direct-to-TV release, or direct-to-DVD release. I've got to be honest. I did not necessarily watch this film. You know,
I've seen most of these, like, but it's been a while. And it was produced by Bruce Timm and some of the guys behind the original Justice League stuff. And this was kind of a Wonder Woman origin story movie. Featuring Kerry Russell was the voice of Wonder Woman. You know, Nathan Fillion was the voice of Colonel Steve Trevor, which was her love interest slash partner in these movies. And it's basically the story of the Amazonians have been living in secret on this island, and Trevor, a Air Force pilot, gets shot down and lands on this island and discovers the Amazonians and has to join them in a battle against Ares. So, this is like an island where the Greek gods are real.
Yes. I don't know. I'm almost expecting Wonder Woman and Thor to clash at times.
If we ever have that DC Marvel crossover.
Yep. So, you know, I don't know, man. Like, you know, not a knock against female superheroes or anything to that extent. I just, you know, never really saw this film. But, you know, looking at, I love Greek mythology and stuff like that. So, you know.
And it was very close to the Wonder Woman in the Justice League cartoons. yeah, but at the same time, I've always liked Wonder Woman as a part of a group character. Her on her own just never really interests me that much. She kind of falls into the same trap as Superman. When you're all powerful, there's not a whole lot of drama in the in the fight, because you know they're going to win at the end of the day. I mean, when they can catch a bomb and it doesn't hurt them, there's no risk to me.
Yeah, I never understood that. Like, there's got to be a weak point. Like, you know, there's got to be that level of peril, and you know, like you said, if you're just all powerful or all knowing or something, like, it just takes all that away. Like,
yeah, the peril ends up being, can they save the humans?
Well, the peril is
you never think there's no risk to them. It's the risk to the people around them if they screw up and can't save them. But there's no personal risk involved.
And I don't know. Like, I felt oftentimes there was just kind of that identity complex. You know, it's kind of like you got the Inhumans, and the humans are afraid because they have powers. But once the humans realize, oh, they're on our side, then all the pickets and the witch hunts end, and everybody lives happily ever after. Like, that's kind of the story arc that I feel a lot of times with these all-powerful characters. How do we earn the people's respect and their trust?
I gotta say one thing about these the modern DC animated stuff is Wonder Woman couldn't fly back in the day. Like, I don't know if they've changed it in the comic books since then, but I guess like when they started making cartoons, they're like, the invisible jet's a dumb idea, so we're gonna let her fly like Superman. And that always kind of weirded me out when I first saw some of the Wonder Woman Justice League stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. It's definitely, yeah, I kind of got that same vibe. I was just like, I don't know.
Where's the old one, a Super Friends invisible jet? Bring back the invisible jet.
Damn it, I'm taking it back.
All right.
You know, while we're talking about Wonder Woman, one thing that I thought was cool was that in August of 2015, apparently there was a combo pack release which included both the DVD, the Blu-ray, a digital download, as well as a graphic novel that everything was based on for Wonder Woman. So I would like to check out the graphic novel, because typically reading the graphic novels, I can get more into those than I can the films a lot of times.
And a lot of these films are, if not based on actual DC comics, they're, you know, inspired by a certain storyline in the comic. So that's one of the things that's always been cool about these animated features, is seeing a live action version of some of the stories we've read before.
Absolutely.
And so that brings us to number 9 on our list.
Yep. Number 9, Justice League Crisis on Two Earths.
Which is kind of an adaptation of the Crisis on what, Earth 2, or some of those crises on mini-verses. DC's always a fan of the multiverse.
Absolutely. And, you know, starting with the Justice League, these films always interest me because there was that group dynamic. You know, a lot of these characters, I'm with you. Single, standalone, not so great. But in a group, a team environment, you know, the dynamics worked, and I was able to get behind them and get more invested into the series.
Yeah, this one came out in 2010, also produced by Bruce Timm, starring most of the guys from the old animated series styles. And in this one, basically, there's an alternative universe Justice League, where basically the roles of heroes and villains are reversed, where Lex Luthor is the hero and the Justice League are called the Syndicate. They're basically a crime organization, and he leaps into our universe to try to recruit people to help him fight the evil Justice League.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I mean, I don't know. I kind of liked the whole, you know, kind of Lex Luthor and the Joker, which in this they refer to him as the Jester.
Yeah,
which I was like, I don't know about that. Like, the Joker should just be the Joker, not the Jester.
Superman was Ultraman. There was Superwoman. Was it the Quick, I think, was the evil version of Flash. It was kind of just weird alternative versions of the heroes we know. And for fans of NCIS, Mark Harmon was the voice of Superman in this, with Gina Torres as Superwoman, Chris North as Lex Luthor, James Wood as Owlman, which was the alternate universe Batman. and William Baldwin is Bruce Wayne Batman.
Woohoo, woohoo.
That's what I think when I hear Owlman. Like, it just, I don't know. Like, it's almost like there's an identity crisis happening in this alternate universe. But I do like the play that, you know, evil typically trumps good. I mean, you don't get, you know, that angle of things a lot of times. Like, you know, often everybody wants the heroes to win. And you know what? I think with, like, you know, Suicide Squad coming up, I kind of going to be rooting for the villains.
And even with this, you can see the, you know, the motivations of, if things turn out just slightly differently, these heroes could have been villains. I mean, if Superman didn't get raised by Ma and Pa Kent, taught to be a good guy, and landed in, you know, Las Vegas or wherever, and got raised by a criminal organization, this is what would have happened. Yeah, or, well, you know, if they just realized, like, I'm stronger than everybody else, I'm going to take care of myself instead of taking care of everybody else. It's very easily for the good to flip to the bad.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, look at, and that's one of the, like, underlying themes with DC a lot. I mean, look at Robin's character. I mean, Robin started out as, like, a, you know, punk-ass little kid that was on the wrong track until, you know, Batman kind of took him under his wing and said, hey, I'm going to, you know, show you how to use these powers for good and try to mold you into a, you know, a model citizen in a sense.
Yeah, and with this one too, it was kind of weird that the Owlman, basically his whole thing was, he's like, whatever I do doesn't matter because every decision I make, there's going to be an alternate universe where I made the other decision. So the only way to make sense of life is to destroy everything. So he builds this bomb that he wants to take to the original Earth and cause a chain reaction to destroy all realities. And there's a cool scene where even the evil Justice League realize what his plan is, and they're like, all right, we're going to help y'all so we can... And also, freaking Deathstroke, Slade Wilson was the president in the alternate universe, which was kind of weird.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's, like, Flash has to use his speed to open a portal so Batman can chase after, you know, the Owlman, and Batman's like, no, you're not fast enough. There's no way you can open it. The only one fast enough is Johnny Quick, the evil Flash, and he agrees to do it, but in opening the portal, it kills him because it basically has to move so fast that he ages himself out. And he's like, you knew that would happen. He's like, so yeah, basically Batman, like, knew that it was, like, going to be a suicide mission and lied to Flash so the evil Flash would have to take the fall. I mean, that's the kind of decisions Batman makes. It's he's the only one in that whole squad that's willing to make the tough choices. Yeah, that's what kind of makes him such a more interesting character.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I mean, you know, just to always do the right thing. Like, no, there's always kind of that cause and effect or collateral damage, I guess you could say, in this scenario. But I don't know. I mean, that's what I've liked about the whole Batman dynamic is, you know, he often is put into those situations. And none of the other characters really have that. You know, they're just kind of byproducts, if you will. And I don't know. I guess maybe that makes him feel disposable in a way.
Yeah, Superman would never sacrifice someone else to save the world. I mean, he would sacrifice himself, but he would never sacrifice somebody else to get the job done. And Batman would. If it's the Earth or you, he's going to throw you under the bus.
I mean, sometimes you got to be an asshole for the greater good.
Exactly. And that brings us to our number 8 movie, Justice League War, which is a fairly new one.
Yeah, this one, what, 2011, I believe, is when this one was released. Yes. You know, and I gotta say, man, Justice League War was a great film. I thoroughly enjoyed War.
Yeah, this was kind of a reboot of the Justice League based on DC's New 52 continuity. So it's like the Justice League's first mission. The Earth is being invaded by some aliens, and it's happening pretty much in everybody's city, and they're having to come together to stop this impending invasion and learn to work together. And this one has Alan Tudyk is doing the voice of Superman.
Yes.
So any Firefly fans out there knows exactly who that is. And Jason O'Mara as Batman. And yeah, it's interesting. I do like the interaction between Flash and Green Lantern. Those are like really the only two people who kind of know each other, I guess, and give each other shit. And I like the running joke too in it that like no one believes Batman is real.
Yeah. So
it's like the Flash and Bat are, was it Green Lantern and Batman are the first two to like team up, and then they go to find Superman because he's the only alien that they know of. And at some point they run into Flash. He's like, what's going on, man? He's like, yeah, just nothing. Just hanging out with Batman. And he's like, Batman's real? It's, yes. Like, it's like him and Flash are like Batman fanboys that have like thought he was just a legend.
And you know, that's, you know, one of the other things is, you know, I like the fact that you got all the different story arcs of Gotham, of Metropolis, and you know, it just added much more dynamic to the storyline, the characters, and their interactions. I mean, I don't feel like you got a lot of those plays outside of the Justice League.
Oh, yeah. And, I like the one thing, too, about these animated Justice Leagues over the Justice League TV show is they all went back to using Hal Jordan as the Green Lantern, where the other Justice League stuff had the, was it, Jeff Jones or something. I can't remember his name right now, but they used a different version of the Green Lantern. It's been a while since I've read any Green Lantern cartoon, so I can't remember what his name was. But yeah, they're using a different version of Green Lantern for these. And also NCIS fans, Rocky Carroll as Sly Stone, the guy who builds, you know, Cyborg. So There's only a few well-known actors in these DC animated movies.
I don't know. It was always weird to... Shazam was always a weird character.
Like, little kid by day, superhero by night.
Shazam!
That's it. And since it's like a new kind of a reboot, I liked this version of Wonder Woman because she was pretty much like fresh off the boat from Themyscira. So she's like really learning how to be human and fit into our society. So she's still like this almost cartoonish warrior character.
Well, I mean, you know, it's funny, you know, like when she interacts with humans, because like, I mean, she does like a threat, like, you know, like, yeah, you will give me this ice cream or whatever the case
is. Yeah, she sees
is.
Some and little like, kid. Oh, shit. And she's like, what are you doing? He's like, eating ice cream? What is ice cream? It's the best food ever. And then she looks at it and she's like, this is the best food ever. You will give us more of this ice cream. That, and I'm like, she's going to meet the president, and there's like a protest against her, and there's some like dude leading the protest, and she gets him with her lasso of truth, and she's like, why are you really doing this? She's like, I dress up as a Wonder Woman cosplay, and it makes me feel powerful. And she starts laughing. She's like, yes, it makes me feel powerful too.
Yes. But yeah, I mean that's one of the, you know, more fun dynamics of Wonder Woman that I really enjoyed in the film is, you know, trying to figure out how the hell I'm supposed to interact with these humans because I do not understand them at all.
Yeah, and Superman's kind of a dick in this. He's like kind of like a hothead too. It's kind of fun seeing these characters that you're used to seeing working together, learning again how to work together.
Yes.
Especially like, you know, after it's all over with and they're kind of, you know, the president's introduced them as like these, you know, super friends, and they're like, but we're not friends. We're not a team. And you're like, he's like, and Batman's like, hey, maybe we need to be. You'll keep the cops off my back, you know, if they think we're all, you know, and if something bad like this happens again, we'll know we can call each other, but, you know, we don't have to like each other, but we need to at least work together.
Yeah, I kind of like that dynamic where they're trying to figure out what the hell to call themselves.
Yeah. It's freaking Shazam, or Captain Marvel's like, we're the Super Seven. And they're like, no, we're not the Super Seven. That's a dumb name, kid.
Yes. Oh, damn. But yeah, War was really, really good. I enjoyed it.
And number seven on our list, a throwback to the old Batman the Animated Series, Batman the Mask of the Phantasm.
Yeah. taking it way back on this one, back to 1993.
Yeah, and this was actually a theatrical release. It's kind of weird that these, you know, most of these animated DC stuff are straight to videos, but this one was, you know, so good that they put that thing on theaters.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, the budget for this was $6 million, grossed $5.6 million in the box office. So not necessarily a big hit, you know, as far as the theatrical release, but I think they've since recouped, especially as fans go back and start to revisit these films because
It came out so quick, there wasn't a whole lot of advertising for it. So it definitely, you know, became bigger on video than it was in the theaters. But yeah, this was a pretty bad story. I mean, the story is basically Batman was in love with this girl before he became Batman. And then he almost like decided like, yeah, I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to try to be happy. And she leaves him for mysterious reasons, and he goes on to be Batman. Well, 20 years later, she shows back up in Gotham, and it turns out that her father was actually owed a bunch of money to these mafia bosses, and they killed him. So she's back as the Phantasm, killing all these former mob bosses and hitmen, and pretty much since she's kind of just an all-blacked-out thing, she's mistaken for Batman. So now Batman is having to track down this killer and, you know, prove he's not the serial killer that's running around Gotham killing everybody.
That was always weird. As much as Batman jumped in and saved the day, people were real quick to give him shit.
Yeah.
Like, he's done much greater good than bad, but yet you all hate him. Why is that?
Because he's very, very sneaky. And, you know, also, as it turns out, that the Joker was one of the hitmen, so Batman is forced to defend his number one enemy from this girl. So it's weird seeing Batman having to protect the Joker.
Yeah, you know, but you see that in some of the other films too, where, you know, Batman's in prison, the Joker, and I mean, we'll get to that film later on, but you know, that's kind of, you know, been hinted at a few times where, you know, people's kind of like, dude, you got to grow some balls, and like, if these people are this bad, like, we need to rid the world of them.
Yeah, I mean, there's always that theory that, you know, without Batman, they wouldn't have the Joker and all these other places, because if Batman would just nut up and end some of these bad guys, because inevitably they always escape from Arkham and kill more people.
Yes.
Arkham has the shittiest security. It's like the easiest prison to break out of.
Like, it's supposed to be like so secure, but yet everybody seems to be able to escape.
Yeah. And if you know, if you just took these people out to begin with, we wouldn't be having these issues.
Ah, kind of sounds like our penal system today.
Batman needs to use a gun, that's all I'm saying.
Yes.
Speaking of Batman using guns, our number six film, The Flashpoint Paradox.
Yeah, this was, I don't know, you know, we're starting to really get into, you know, some of the films that I really enjoyed. This one's actually on Netflix as well. You know, this was a little bit newer, from 2011, kind of based on the comic crossover Flashpoint from Jeff Jones and Andy Kubert. And I got to say, man, this one was really good, you know, where, you know, the Flash is basically, you know, visiting his, you know, mother's grave and everything. And it was, you know, kind of had a pretty dark story arc to it. You know, the Flash is, you know, very conflicted on, you know, if I would have been a little bit quicker, I could have saved her and blah, blah, blah. And I mean, there's, you know, some pretty heavy moments in this film.
Yeah. And we have Kevin Conroy back as Batman, Daly as Superman. And we even had Nathan Fillion as the Green Lantern, Hal Jordan Green Lantern. And yeah, basically Flash wakes up from like a nap and the world has changed. Like, everything has gone slightly awry. He's not the Flash. No one has ever heard of the Flash. Some of the bad guys have turned out to be good guys. There's a world war going on between the Amazonians and the Atlanteans that are threatening to destroy the world. There's no Justice League. And he's trying to piece together what happened. And he assumes that it was Zoom, our Professor Zoom, somehow, because he is a time traveler, change something that caused things to go awry. For instance, like Superman didn't crash in Kansas. He's crashed in the middle of Metropolis, and so he's been like locked up in a government research facility. So there's no Superman in this world.
Aquaman. No. His dead mother is alive. Like, yeah. You know, that's a big underlying.
Aquaman and apparently him and Wonder Woman had an affair and she killed his wife. And now there's this huge war between the Atlanteans and the Amazonians that are destroying the world. And like I said, some of the superheroes and some of the bad guys are all trying to stop things. And one of the weirdest twists in this is the Batman that you see in this. It's not Bruce Wayne. Like, when everything changed, instead of Bruce Wayne's parents dying in that alley, Bruce died in that alley, and his father became Batman, and his mom snapped and becomes the Joker. That was the most interesting kind of twist on all that.
But I really like that dynamic, though. Like, I mean, it did something. I mean, this was one of the you know, out of the Justice League films, that pivotal, you know, kind of... you know, story arc really just sucked me in. Like, it had, just because you hadn't seen those dynamics in any of the previous or...
And the Thomas Wayne version of Batman is a badass. He's like a dual-wielding, like, just shooting the piss out of everybody.
You know, you kind of wish that Bruce Wayne had some of that in him. Like...
yeah. And so, you know, Flash is convinced he has to run fast and travel back in time. So they have to recreate the accident that made him the Flash, which the first attempt fails, and he just gets roasted. And he's like, we got to do it again. This time just put the flames out faster.
Yes. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I really enjoyed...
Oh, yeah, people getting killed right and left in this thing, too. Because, once Flash gets his powers back, he still can't travel back in time because there's another... someone draining the speed force. So he's like, there's another speedster in this world. It's got to be Zoom. So they all go to Europe to kind of fight this war between, try to stop this war between the Amazonians and the Atlanteans, and pretty much just turns it out into an all-out war. And then Zoom's like, I didn't do this. That's the best part.
Yes.
You did this. Like, you went back and tried to stop your mother from dying, and you caused all this. This is a... it's like, you know, that whole realization that Flash is like, because, you know, with the time things get all, he forgot that he had caused this. So, yeah, that realization that this one selfish move pretty much destroyed the world.
Yeah, and that was, you know, and... I don't know. Can you really view that as selfish? Like, I mean... I don't know. Like, I guess you just don't realize, you know, the impact that something like that could have in the greater scheme of things.
It's like, the way Zoom describes it is like, when you break the sound barrier, there's a shockwave. You broke the time barrier, so imagine what kind of shockwave that caused.
Yeah. But I don't know. I do like the fact that, you know, Flash had to, you know, ultimately rely on Zoom's powers to kind of right, you know, all of the wrongs and everything.
So. Oh, yeah, because he's like, you know, he's like, I'm preventing you from going back in time. And Batman just shoots him in the head. He's like, now you ain't got to worry about it. And then that ending, too, where Flash goes to see Bruce at the end and explains to him what all happened to him and stuff. And, you know, he's just kind of, you know, working on his utility belt going, yeah, it's a freaking interesting story. And then he hands him this letter that his father had wrote him, in the alternate universe. And Batman actually cries. You know, he, yes, like, tears up for a second. Don't show his face. Just shows the tears dropping on the letter as he's writing. And then he turns around. He's like, you're one hell of a delivery messenger, Flash.
Yes.
Like, that. Like I said, you never see Batman have those personal moments like that.
No.
That's one of the reasons why I kind of like this one. And continuing on the top five here, Batman Beyond, Return of the Joker.
Yes. So, you know, this was released in, 2000 in America. And I got to say, this movie was awesome. The animation style freaked me the fuck out a little bit. Like, this is not...
A little bit acid trippy?
Yes. Like, I don't know. You know, it was kind of weird. You know, we... Actually, you know, what's kind of cool about this film is, you know, the film was released PG-13, but there is an uncut rated R version that is also available.
Yeah, I think the original, you know, DVD release might have been R-rated, but it had to tone it down for TV, because in the original version, I mean, the story of this, it's in the future. The Joker shows back up and starts causing havoc. And so Terry McGinnis, the Batman of our time, is like, this can't be he's like, it's a Joker. And Batman keeps insisting it's a Joker imposter. And he's like, well, what happened to the original Joker? Maybe it's his son, maybe something like that. And Batman kind of refuses to tell him. He's like, no, it's just not the Joker. So he finally goes to that time's Commissioner Gordon, which is Barbara Gordon. She explains this whole story about how Tim Drake was kidnapped by the Joker, and the Joker basically tortured him and experimented on him and tried to turn him into a Joker Jr., and it kind of just broke Batman. Like, Batman beat the shit out of the Joker.
Yes.
And in the original version, the Joker tries to get the kid to kill Batman, and instead he shoots the Joker and kills the Joker. And Mark Hamill's portrayal of that, when Joker's like impaled with this like arrow, he's just like, that's not funny. That's not funny at all. As he like, yes. But in the PG-13 version, you know, instead of shooting him, he drops the gun and attacks him. And then the Joker basically hits a bunch of electrical wires and like trips, falls, and hits the switch and fries himself, making it an accident. But the original version is much darker.
Yes. And I gotta say, I've watched both versions, and I think I much more prefer the uncut version, because, yeah. You know, like you said, it was much more raw, it was grittier, it was darker, it was, you know, just some of those dynamics you don't see out of Batman.
Yeah, and it turns out that, you know, after that, you know, Tim Drake, you had to go through all kind of therapy and shit, and just kind of retired as a normal dude. But during that time, Joker had implanted a microchip in him that would eventually turn him into the Joker and reincarnate him. It was Joker's, you know, immortality plan, pretty much. So, yeah.
Shit, you know, I mean, fuck. Not only the immortality thing, but the, you know, crazy-ass satellite firing the laser beam. Like, dude, that shit was like, oh, hell.
Yeah. And it was kind of awesome seeing Terry's version of Batman fighting the Joker, because, you know, Bruce Wayne's like, just don't say anything, just power through. He likes to talk, but he's like, I like to talk, too. And so he starts making fun of the Joker and making jokes. He's like, all this time, you're just trying to get a laugh at the old man. But dude wouldn't laugh if a joke bit him in the cape. And it's like, this car's, he's like, you're just freaking pathetic. And he's like, don't make fun of me. It's like, funny. He's like, what? The Joker always wanted to make Batman laugh. And is basically like, just gets him off his game by freaking interacting. Joker never had a Batman that would talk shit to him. And it just unnerves the fuck out of him.
Yeah, I mean, and that, I thought that was awesome. You know, just the kind of using Joker's own antics, you know, it was just awesome.
And probably one of my favorites of Batman Beyond is the Bat Dog.
Yes.
And moving around along, number four on our list,
Batman Assault on Arkham. 2014 release.
Yeah, this one was pretty good. I mean, it had pretty much the same. This one actually had Kevin Conroy as doing the voice of Batman again, Troy Baker, CCH Pounder. But this is basically the Suicide Squad movie before we got the live action Suicide Squad movie.
Yeah, and I don't know. I thought this was cool. You know, I mean, seeing Black Spider, Deadshot, Harley Quinn, you know, KG Beast, you know, Killer Frost and King Shark, you know, all of these people, you know, coming into this film and everything was just awesome.
Yeah, because basically Joker is locked up in Arkham, and apparently he's planted a nuclear device somewhere in Gotham. So the Suicide Squad is basically a team of supervillains that have been, you know, forced into helping by the government. They've been injected with like bombs and stuff, and they're having to find this bomb. So they're the only way to find it is to break into Arkham and beat it out of the Joker. And then the whole time, also Batman's trying to solve the crime or whatnot. But yeah, seeing, you know, these villains become heroes is especially, I think, out of the villains, Deadshot is probably one of my favorite. He kind of becomes the de facto leader of the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of Deadshot.
And the voice of CeCe Pounder, who has played basically the government liaison between the Justice League and she always runs kind of like the secret thing, Amanda Waller.
Yeah.
She has done that voice in all of these, the TV shows, the movies. I think she would have been a perfect version for the live action Amanda Waller. I mean, she's always been good as that intimidating boss lady. Of course she's not in Suicide Squad, but yeah, I really think they should have used her because she is just iconic in this role.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird that they didn't. I mean, like you said, she's pivotal, like in the story arc. So.
And Troy Baker, who is famous for all kind of animated stuff, especially video games, doing the voice of the Joker. I mean, it's almost to the point where you don't realize it's not Mark Hamill. I mean, his Joker is so good.
Yeah, I that version of the Joker was awesome, and just.
And Harley Quinn too in this she's weird and slutty.
In typical Harley fashion.
Yeah, when she pretty much seduces Deadshot. And that's another thing. Harley Quinn is a character that's hugely popular now. We're getting our first live action version of her, but she's not a character from the comic books. She was a creation of the Batman animated TV series, and she was so popular that she has made the transition from cartoons to comics and is all over the DC universe.
You know,
now.
She has her. So this month's loot crate that I got actually has the Harley Quinn comic. So she now has her own comic. I haven't read it yet, but it is on my to-do list.
Yeah, everyone's favorite Dragon Con costume to play. It's like it's number one costume is Deadpool. Second has to be Harley Quinn.
What about Dead Quinn?
I've not seen that mashup yet, but it's probably coming. I would not doubt it. All right, that gets us to the top three. Number three on our list, Justice League Doom.
Yes, so this is released in 2012. And, I got to say, man, Justice League Doom is just absolutely badass.
Yeah, Kevin Conroy again, Tim Daly, Nathan Fillion as Green Lantern, and another old Superman character, Michael Rosenbaum, playing the Flash, who was Lex Luthor in the Smallville TV series. And I gotta say, I've always liked his version of the Flash in some of these animated movies and TV shows.
Absolutely, yeah, and I don't know, I like the fact that they incorporated, Vandal Savage into this, Mirror Master, and some of these other, more obscure characters.
Yeah, I mean, it was the Legion of Doom, which I've not seen since the old Super Friends cartoon. And basically, Mirror Master breaks into Batman's computer. Because Batman, always has a contingency plan. His contingency plans have contingency plans. And he has compiled a database on all Justice League members to, if they ever turned rogue, this is how we take them down. And like I said, the villains steal that dossier and basically use Batman's plans to kill off all the Justice League so they can, further some other plan that's going to wipe out the world pretty much. And Batman gets, buried alive by Bane, and like Superman gets shot by a kryptonite bullet. Wonder Woman gets poisoned with this stuff that makes her hallucinate, and basically she is going to like fight herself to death. The Martian Manhunter gets set on fire. They break Green Lantern's will by making him think he was responsible for some people getting killed and stuff. And it's, up to Batman trying to just kind of unravel his own plans, because there's always that, who would win a fight, Batman versus Superman. Batman is always five steps ahead of everybody.
Yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. Like, I it's his wit and how methodical everything is so planned
yes.
out. Like, like you were talking about, you got a contingency for the contingency of the contingency.
And I like, probably one of my favorite parts of this movie is Batman tells him I'm the one that did this to you. Someone stole my plans. And they're all like this, why, how could you do this? This is a breach of trust. And, but they kind of have to keep going until they finish off the bad guys. But then, they're all kind of having the meeting to decide the fate of Batman. And even Hal Jordan's like, I don't necessarily have a problem with what he did. I have a problem that these things got stolen. Like, you know, that was irresponsible. And everyone else is like, you know, this is a breach of trust. How could you plot against us like this? And then Batman basically is like, hey, you don't need to vote. If y'all are too naive to not realize why this is necessary, then I don't need to be here. Like, because each of you on your own is a weapon of mass destruction. And if you ever turned bad for even just mind controlled, even if you don't, wittingly
all it takes
turn
is,
against
know,
us.
A little scarecrow fear gas and, you know, like, there you go. Shit's hit the fan.
So, yeah. So when he walks out on that meeting, I love it because Superman comes to him and he's like, let me ask you a question. He's like, Bane buried you alive. That obviously wasn't one of your plans. He's like, no, you know, there wasn't a plan for me. So they had to improvise. He's like, are you so arrogant that you don't see that, you know, there should be a plan to stop you if you ever turn against us? He's like, there is a contingency for that. It's called the Justice League. He's like, that's why I started this. You know, if I ever go bad, y'all are the ones that are supposed to stop me. And the Superman, like, at that point, he's like, that's what I thought. And gives him the bullet back. The kryptonite bullet that Batman had built to stop Superman if it ever happened. He's like, what's this? He's like, I just want to think if anything ever were to happen, there's someone I can trust to stop me. And that whole scene between those two was probably my favorite part of that movie.
Yeah, I would agree to that. So as we wind down here, we are now at number 2.
Batman, The Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, and this is actually a, a two-part film, but...
Based off the Frank Miller Dark Knight Returns series. And I say, this is the closest adaptation, like, straight page for page, nearly, of a graphic novel I've ever seen. This is, this one's not inspired by a comic book. This is a animated version of the comic book.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons that, for me, this makes the number 2 spot is, because, like you said, it is that, animated version of the comics.
Yeah, Peter Weller as old man Batman. Because basically this is, kind of reminds me of The Watchmen, where the superheroes have kind of been outlawed, where you either work for the government or you're not allowed to be a superhero. So Superman is a arm of the U.S. government, and all the other superheroes kind of either agreed with it or went underground. And Batman kind of retired and was like, fuck it, I'm old, I'm out. But then he just sees his city turn to shit, and he's like, I can't take it anymore. I have to come out of retirement and save my city once again.
This time with a little help from Carrie Kelly. I thought that was kind of a, unique one. Basically relying on the young girl, but,
Who's a Robin costume is a modified Halloween costume. She's just kind of a Batman fangirl and joins his fight because he gets injured and needs somebody to save his ass.
But I don't know. I thought it was kind of cool, when, he basically has her disguise herself as a mutant and everything to kind of, lure everybody down to the sewers and stuff. And I don't know.
Yeah,
like
I said, freaking RoboCop is Batman. Disc 1, the first half of this movie, like I said, he's taking on this gang of mutants and ends up just beating the shit out of their leader. And it's cool because the Joker apparently is just like a freaking comatose vegetable at this point in an insane asylum. But he starts hearing people talk about Batman on TV and stuff. And it kind of wakes him out. And he's like, I gotta, go out and cause shit now.
Yeah.
And later on, when the Joker finally busts out, this is probably the most evil version of the Joker we've seen. I mean, he's killing people right and left. And Batman is just... He's gotten to the point where he's like, I've had enough of your shit. And just freaking breaks his spine. And he's like, that's it. I'm tired of your ass. Snap.
But, that's a great segue into part 2 where, Batman has that guilty conscience and that sense of remorse. And that's all of what the second series revolves around.
Yeah, and... which is kind of cool because they send Superman to stop him. The president is like, your boy up in Gotham is making us look bad. You got to go, you got to go stop him. And he's like, he won't stop if I tell him. And he's like, if you won't stop, you're going to have to stop him. Basically tells Batman that he's going to have to kill Batman.
Yep.
And it's kind of cool because Batman has pretty much a whole army of you know, all the mutants have, like, you know, have kind of become a cult that worships Batman now. They're like a gang. They're like we're going to save people. We're the Batman of Gotham. And, like, Superman goes off to fight in this war and ends up stopping a nuclear missile and is kind of injured. And the EMP just knocks out all the power in Gotham, and Gotham just kind of dissolves into chaos. So Batman just kind of puts this gang together and teaches them how to do good and kind of polices the whole city, where the rest of the East Coast is kind of turned into shit because of, you know, the power outage. Gotham has survived, which makes, you know, the government look even more bad. So they finally tell Superman, you got to go shut him down. And Batman is just like, get the fuck out of my city.
Well, I love the fact, too, that you got Oliver Queen, the Green Arrow, also making an appearance.
Yep. One-armed Oliver Queen.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that whole fight where Batman, you know, he's been preparing for years for this battle. I mean, he's got X-ray detecting missiles. As soon as he uses his X-ray vision, all these missiles launch and start blowing him up. He's got this Iron Man-like suit and just beats the shit out of Superman. And, like, my favorite part, too, is, like, Arrow, because he's like, I gotta be in on this, hits him with a kryptonite arrow that kind of bursts into gas, and he inhales it, and it makes him weak for a minute, and Batman just starts beats the crap out of him, where his face is all smashed up, and he's like, you know, to find the perfect combination took years and billions of dollars. Luckily, I had both. And if I had changed the formula just the slightest, you would be dead. But I don't want you dead. I just want you to know, anytime in the dark of night where you just feel like the slightest ache or fear, you just know that I could kill you if I wanted to. Or how that speech goes. That is probably the most badass Batman versus Superman moment.
Yeah. And I don't know. You know, I like the whole fact that, you know, the entire time, you know, Batman has faked his death and everything else.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, once again, kind of the contingency for the contingency.
Yeah. He makes the suit or whatever, you pretty much look like he's having a heart attack. So Superman is convinced that, you know, the strain of kicking his ass has killed him. And, you know, so there's whole Batman's funeral and stuff, and they're all there. And you see the girl is, like, you know, wearing a robe or whatever. Everyone starts to walk off. She's still there, and you kind of see a shovel poking out of the bottom of her dress. And Superman's like, "Do I know you?" And then kind of hears like a faint heartbeat, and just like, and just kind of winks at her. And he's like, "Yeah, stay out of trouble, kid," or whatever. And just walks off. He's like, "I ain't fucking with this."
Which I, you know,
y'all do what you do. Just keep it quiet. I don't want to do this anymore.
But I thought that was cool. You know, I mean, that, you know, the whole Batman team in with Kelly and, you know, Oliver Queen and everything, like, was just awesome.
Yep. And the number one on our list,
Batman Under the Red Hood from 2000.
And this was a close one between this and Dark Knight Returns, but this made the number one list on so many people's lists that it had to get that that number one spot.
Well, I mean, you know, there's so much to this. I mean, you know, the whole fact that, you know, Batman has, you know, tried to groom Robin, you know, from childhood into being a better person, using her powers for good, only to have, you know, the Joker kill Robin and, you know, set that whole dynamic, you know, for, you know, the Red Hood to make appearance. And
this, even the story of the Red Hood is weird, because it was basically in the comics, there was a vote, a poll, should Robin die? And this was Jason Todd. This wasn't Tim Drake or the original Dick Grayson. And fans voted, and he got the axe.
Yeah.
And literally got beat to death by the Joker with a crowbar, which is probably one of the most gruesome endings for a Batman sidekick. But then all of a sudden this Red Hood vigilante shows up in Gotham and starts killing bad guys right and left. And Batman's like trying to figure out who or what's going on. And stars Jensen Eccles from Supernatural as the Red Hood, Jason Todd. And basically, Ra's al Ghul, you know, thought he was doing something good for Batman and brought his protege back using the Lazarus pits. But, you know, it was all bad. Yeah, he did not come back the same. The scars of his death kind of made him into a much darker character.
And, you know, I love that dynamic, though. I mean, you know, the whole interaction, you know, when, you know, Batman figures out that it's Jason and, you know, they're in Arkham Asylum and, you know, the Joker and Batman's there and, you know, Jason's like, if you're not going to kill this guy, then I'm going to put a bullet in his head and yada, yada, yada. Like, I mean, that was another very interesting dynamic that you typically don't see, you know, within the Batman franchise.
Yeah, I mean, and Batman really struggles about whether or not he should stop him because he kind of feels guilty that he was not able to save his Robin.
So, I don't know. I just really thoroughly enjoyed this film, that whole dynamic, and I don't know, like, I've always kind of viewed Robin as a, you know, kind of a weakling in a lot of sense, but, you know, Robin really kind of came into his own in this. Like, it's like, oh shit, he's formidable. He's a badass.
Yeah, and that whole standoff at the end where he kind of has the Joker and, like, throws Batman a gun, and it was like, you know, you either have to kill me or I'm going to kill the Joker. You've got to break your rules. And Batman refuses, and he kind of turns the gun on Batman, but Batman blows up the gun with a batarang, but the Red Hood sets off a bomb that he had already planted to try and take out the Joker and everybody, you know. Either way, but yeah, there's, of course, Batman and the Joker make it out alive, and the Red Hood kind of disappears, so you never know if he survived or not. But I
don't know, you know, I mean, it was cool, you know, seeing Nightwing, you know, a whole lot of the other characters too. And then, you know, Ra's al Ghul as well. So, I don't know. I really dug this film.
Yeah, I mean, and some of the actors in it said, Neil Patrick Harris played Dick Grayson in Nightwing. Bruce Greenwood was Batman in this version. As we kind of wrap it up, is there anything honorable mentions that maybe didn't make our list that you enjoy?
Honorable mentions. Damn. I don't know. I mean, you know, there were several other films, and I'm not as familiar and haven't watched them as recently. And, you know, I would love to be able to go back and watch all 24 films and then redo the list and see how it tops out. Because I really couldn't form an opinion because it either I hadn't seen them or it had been so long since I seen them that they didn't stand out in my head like these did.
I think for me, because I've seen pretty much almost all of them, I would recommend Batman Year Zero, which was basically the story of Batman's first year on the streets. It's kind of, you know, it's got a much younger Alfred where he's kind of like an old soldier kind of helping Batman out that I thought was cool. And James Gordon, who's played by what's the name that played Heisenberg in Breaking Bad, is the voice of Gordon. And it shows it's kind of Gordon's origin story too, where him coming into a corrupt Gotham PD and cleaning everything up. And he's just a total badass in this movie. There was also, Batman Gotham Knights, which was like a series of short stories, the gap between Dark Knight and Batman Begins movies. It was this, like, you know, unofficial animated series. And it had, like, several short story Batman stories, each done by different animators and writers. It was all voiced by Kevin Conroy, but, like, each short was done in a different animation style, which was very cool. I think Todd McFarlane even did one of them, if I'm remembering that correctly.
Oh, shit, I need to check that out. Yeah, I'm a big McFarlane
fan. Gotham Knight is badass. So, as we wrap up, what do you think of the cigar we've been smoking?
You know, It maintained that medium level down to the final third. Like, I think it actually increased in strength just a little bit. You know, some of those peppery notes, they weren't real strong, but it was enough there on the palate that you could definitely pick up that hint of spice. Once again, I'm going to say it was very complex. It was enjoyable and so budget-friendly that I'm going to find myself going back to this cigar again and again.
Yeah, the flavor, the strong, the good flavor goes throughout, and then it, like I said, it never gets really above a medium. So I mean, this is a cigar you could have two or three of these in a day without really.
Yeah, and I mean, before we started recording, you know, had the big ass, you know, one of Christoph's new cigars that was, you know, much more full body. And I mean, that was a 2.5 hour smoke. So coming off of that smoke and then coming into this one is a very good dynamic. Like you said, you know, I could enjoy multiple of these cigars a day. It wouldn't be a problem, you know, and it would still be satisfying and fulfilling. And, you know, for a medium-bodied cigar, I got to say, this is probably one of the best mediums that I've smoked at this price point.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I'm definitely sold on that. And with that, we'll be right back with the next segment.
Stay tuned.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back to the podcast. It's Beer 30. Pour them if you got them. What are we drinking this week, Brad?
You know, we're drinking another local brew here just north of the Atlanta area out of Woodstock, Georgia. Reformation Brewing.
OTP.
Yep. We're drinking the Providence. This is the Reunited Belgian Triple.
Yeah, and I say it's definitely has a very sweet floral citrusy aroma. It's definitely qualifies as a fruity bastard.
Yeah, you know, it's this beer, I don't know, I'm really digging on it. I mean, it's I guess maybe because it's dry hopped or something. I mean, the aroma is there. You know, I'm definitely picking up on sort of that sweet citrus, but you know, for this beer to be 9.2% ABV, you do not taste any alcohol.
No, it's definitely not. It doesn't like, feel like a barley wine. It, yeah, feels like a Belgium, just Belgium on steroids.
Yeah, but it is really good. I don't know. I'm really digging it. I don't know. And the fruity flavor, it's weird because it's all on the back end of the palate. Like, you don't get it on the initial, you know, taste. It's all on the back end.
So. From the retrohale? But whatever that is in beer terminology.
Yeah, I don't think you want to retrohale a liquid. I mean, you can go for it, but I mean, I'm
pretty much... if Ozzy can start a line of ants, I can start a line of beer.
I mean,
it's gonna burn, but I'm saying it's possible. I wouldn't recommend it.
I'm not saying
probably wouldn't enjoy it.
Not saying
but
it's
it
impossible.
Is possible.
You know, it's your life. You live it how you choose. I'm not one to judge. But I don't know, man. I got to say, on this beer, I'm at about a solid 4.5. I don't know. This is the first Reformation Brewery beer that I've tried, and you know, they've got a stout that I was looking at, and the stout looks delicious too.
And I'm starting to see this, you know, in a lot of my local bars I've been going to and cigar shops and whatnot. But yeah, I have to take a trip out there and tour their brewery at some point. I mean, not my favorite style of beer, but it's very drinkable. I mean,
yeah, I mean it's good. You know, I come to digging the Reformation website too, because not only do they kind of give you a background and then a synopsis of the beer, but then they also, you know, break it into pairings and you know, the you know, and it's funny how they do it, because they break it into moments, they break it out into food, and then even music.
Yeah, so you got some music to pair with your beer, too. Kind of like if you ever listen to, what is it, Cigar Jukebox, where they pair music with cigars.
Yes.
It's like that, but with beer.
I mean, there you go.
But after enough beers, I'll listen to anything. If you're drunk enough, even Justin Bieber sounds okay.
I might even sing it, too.
It's you for Ozzy now.
Yes.
Going so fucking crazy, Train.
dude, you've only had three sips. Chill out.
See, it sounds better the more I drink.
And such is the way of life.
Yeah, chase this with a couple of Woot Stouts, and yeah, I'll be singing some Crazy Train.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I don't know. My final thoughts are I could find myself absolutely drinking this again. I don't know. I like the idea of smoked ribs, you know, going with the citrus. Just my cup of tea there.
Yeah, citrusy fruity flavor. This might even appeal to, like, someone who's a wine drinker and stuff, because this doesn't taste what you normally describe as a beer flavor. I mean, it's very, very fruity.
I mean, it's fruity, but it also has a complexity to it. I don't know. It's just, this is an easy drinking beer. And at 9.2%.
I could get you in trouble.
This could be a very good, easy drinking beer.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
Yes, science! And welcome back to Cigar Nerds Podcast. It's time for some science. Ready to learn some shiznit, Brad?
Yeah, man. What the fuck are you going to teach us?
All right, well, let's get to the heart of the matter.
The telltale heart?
Oh, scientists have grown a heart in the lab.
Nice.
Or at least most of a heart.
I mean, it's enough of a heart that it beats.
Yeah, basically, I mean, there's around 4,100 people on the heart transplant list, and you're pretty much limited to, you know, people dying that are organ donors, which definitely not enough to fill that whole list there. And then also you have the problem of rejecting organs once you know, if you do get a transplant, if it's, you know, made from someone else's meat, you know, your body's, you know, antibodies may try to reject it and
meat.
We'll get to that in a minute.
Damn.
But a recent study published in the Journal of Circulation Research, doctors from Massachusetts General and Harvard Med School has built a heart in the lab out of stem cells.
Awesome. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, basically they've found that you can basically 3D print heart segments using biological material and build kind of a latticework scaffolding framework for the heart, and then using pluripotent stem cells, which basically are made from skin cells. You know, they can actually, a stem cell basically can become anything. Like, you know, when you're born, or when you start off, you're just a group of stem cells that become your bones, your organs, whatever. So these kind of neutral building block cells, they've figured out a way to build heart muscle, and building that heart muscle on these 3D printed heart frames, they've, you know, pretty much, you know, this is like a step closer to building artificial hearts, which will solve your transplant problems.
Yes, science.
And since they're made from your own skin cells, your body won't reject them like they might from a donor heart.
No, that's awesome. This is some science I can get behind. Nobody wants to be a heartless bastard in this world.
I'm pretty happy with it.
So emo.
I mean, this could have helped the Tin Man. Because yeah. All he needed was a heart. And that's, now you can 3D print them.
You know, it was really weird. You know, out of all the cool gadgets that Oz had, they did not have time travel.
Our cars, I had to walk that long yellow brick road. Like, why do you have a yellow brick road? You don't have any cars.
I mean, because I got a horse of a different color.
Yeah, okay. But also, with this, I mean, this primitive heart that they built was so close to real heart that they, you know, even hit it with electricity and it beat like a real heart. So, I mean, we're very close to this becoming actual usable technology.
Now, that's awesome. Some science I can get behind.
And speaking of human flesh, you ever wonder what people taste like?
No, not really. I mean, I feel like we're really kind of getting off on a...
I mean, you're the barbecue guy. I mean...
burn the flesh of the living.
Like, in a post-apocalyptic world, I mean, you may have to, you know, learn how to cook. You make some Soylent Green. Soylent Green is people. But yeah,
I don't know. This segment took a really weird turn. What was going through your head? Like, I wonder what people taste like. Let me Google that shit.
Well, someone who you know, actually kind of figured this out. There's a science presenter for the BBC named Greg Foote, which is kind of ironic because he had part of his leg surgically removed and cooked it to see what human flesh tastes like. And it didn't cut off a whole lot. It basically took a muscle biopsy, which gave a little, you know, little chunks of meat and muscle and connective tissue like you would find in your normal steaks or whatnot. And aroma is responsible for about 80% of taste. That's why sometimes if you're trying to eat something you don't like, you hold your nose, the taste goes away. So what he did, because it is illegal to eat human flesh, even your own flesh apparently, he took it to a doctor that basically studies aroma. You know, they can basically take a smell and break it down into its individual part and say, all right, this smells like this. You've based off the chemicals in you know, that produce. So they cooked this piece of his leg, ran it through their spectrometers or whatnot, and came up with a formula that this smells like a certain percentage of, I believe it was lamb, pork, and beef. So taking that recipe that they gave him, he actually got those meats and blended them together in the ratios that the scientist gave him, and made the closest tasting to a human meat burger you could get.
Wow, that's that's pretty hardcore.
I mean, there is a video on his site, and yeah, he says it tasted pretty good. I mean, so if, you know, he's a very kind of a gamey burger, but yeah. So if The Walking Dead ever kicks off and you run out of food, you can grill people as long as you cook them right. They taste pretty good. And I'll put a little Tabasco on there because Tabasco will cover up anything.
I mean, I'd go for some Frank's Red Hot. I mean, their motto is put that shit on everything.
Oh, and speaking of stupid, you know, we've had a long-running theory that the internet is slowly making us all stupid, except for podcasts. Podcasts are awesome, and you should listen to as many of those as you can, especially at CigarNerdsPodcast.com. But
hey, I see what you did there.
The rest of social media, except for the Cigar Nerds Facebook page, slowly making us dumber. And an example of this, the National Environmental Research Council of Great Britain has built is in the process of building a new Arctic research vessel. This is going to be a vessel that they do experiments in. It's a $300 million boat that's basically, it's like a, it not only is it an icebreaker, can sail in Arctic waters, it's also, you know, run silently, so it can, you know, the noise of the boat doesn't scare off, you know, wildlife or whatnot. But they needed a name for this ship. And, you know, like stuff like the USS Ronald Reagan, or, you know, they usually name boats after famous presidents, famous, you know, military guys. Science crafts are usually named after, you know, famous explorers like, you know, Magellan and whatnot. But they decided to open this up to the internet and let people suggest names for the new boat. And the number one, the current front runner of suggested names is Bodie McBoatface.
I don't see how Howard Stern's penis and the USS Truthiness, like, what the? People need to learn grammar.
Well, I see. This is the difference between English internet users and American internet users. Because this was an American ship, it would probably end up being named SSD's Nuts or something similar. But Bodie McBoatface is the current number one English suggestion.
And I'm Captain Bodie McBoaterton.
Yeah. And
don't quit your J dot. Damn it, day job.
Wow. Did you suggest Bodie McBoatface?
Only about 300 million times. But I used a unique IP address each time.
I mean, if they actually stick with this and name this thing, can you imagine, like, you know, an accident happens? Yeah. Mayday, mayday, this is Bodie McBoatface, we're going down. Our CNN news anchors have to go on the news and be like, tragic accident on Bodie McBoatface. You know, no survivors of the tragic Bodie McBoatface accident. I mean, how can you take that seriously? Like, how, as a newsman, can you keep a straight face describing a tragedy with the name Bodie McBoatface involved?
Everybody died. It was a sad day. You know, I feel like that's just going to make you a target, though. Because people's going to be like, oh, let's just fuck with this one ship that doesn't have a badass name.
They call for assistance, and everybody's like, somebody's joking on the radio again. Like, no, seriously, we need assistance right now. This is the HMS Bodie McBoatface. Like, yeah, whatever, Steve. Quit making fun of us on the radio. There's no way this can end well if they name that boat or ship that by that name.
I don't know. We'll just have to see how that plays out.
Speaking of other dumb ideas, can't do a news segment without our robot news. And this, you know, most robot news, you know, spells our destruction. This might actually be a helpful robot. Domino's Australia has teamed up with Marathon Robotics to build robot pizza delivery drones.
That's pretty cool. I mean, that's the most practical, innovative thing yet.
Yeah, I mean, these robots...
Just watch out for those steps.
And they've built several prototypes of this thing. I mean, it has a heated compartment that can hold up to 10 pizzas and a cold department... department for people who have... compartment who have ordered drinks and whatnot. And it will, using GPS technology, it will drive from the store to your house, and basically you'll be able to put in a code with your, you know, with your, an app on your phone to unlock it when it gets to your house, so, you know, you don't steal someone else's pizza.
Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like, you know, people are going to be, like, robot napping these things off the streets and whatnot. Like,
I mean, robots are taking the jobs of you know, stoners.
I mean, what happened with, what was the robot that was, like, touring all over the world?
Hitchbot.
Yeah, Hitchbot.
Like, yeah, he got, like, destroyed up in, was it Philadelphia or somewhere? Like,
traveled all over the world. Made it to Philly. Nope. Done.
Yeah, how many douchebags are you going to see this thing driving down the road and be like, free pizza?
I mean, that's what I'm saying, like, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this may work in Australia or something, but yeah, I don't think this is something we're ever going to see in America. I mean, it's like I said, it's not a car, so it's not going to have the speed of delivery. I mean, it may work in kind of like, you know, urban environments where you can pretty much walk anywhere. Yeah, you know, but, you know, out here in the country or whatever, where you have to drive 15 miles to get to somebody's house to drop off their pizza, don't think this thing's going to be very popular.
It'll be okay. They'll fly here.
Yeah, we'll get the robot drones here in America. Yeah, because, like, I think a flying pizza delivery drone would probably be a lot quicker than a rolling, you know, a Roomba with a pizza oven in it.
That's a good analogy.
Plus, they're training these robots to be able to find us. I mean, this is like the, you know, hunter killer drones. It's training.
It's like a trap. You think they brought you pizza, but they brought
bring
you
death.
Death sauce pizza.
Yeah, I mean, these things are going to, like, oh, yeah, we already know how to use GPS and hunt people down. We'll just lure them out with pizza and then gun them down. I mean, it's going to kill us all. And speaking of Skynet, because that's the good robot news. The bad robot news is Google's Go Victory, or Google's AlphaGo is an AI program they've built that plays Go, which is a... ancient, I don't know how ancient, because I really don't know anything about the game Go, but it's a Japanese or Chinese game that's supposed to be even more complicated than chess. And recently, AlphaGo challenged Lee Sedoi, the grandmaster of Go, to a game and beat him 4-1.
Damn.
And whether the reason why this is such a big deal is it kind of proves that AI thinking can be unpredictable, and that could be a problem. Because, I mean, right now, you expect you like playing old video games, you could eventually pick up the patterns because it was very predictable. I mean, so it may beat you the first couple rounds.
So many, so much memory for it to hold. So at some point, it is going to repeat.
Yeah, pretty much it's all on rails. But yeah, with this, it's basically comes up to the point where it starts thinking unpredictably, because basically the way you or I learn is based on trial and error. We can only play so many games and see so many outcomes as different possibilities. But this thing being a computer, it can play against itself 24 hours a day and basically see every possible outcome to a situation. So, and then also remember all of those possible outcomes. So the human brain, we can't, think of that many ways this can play out, but this robot, has already memorized every possible move and can counter your every possible move. Luckily this thing's just playing games right now, but if this thing turned into some kind of like military strategist, we be fucked.
I don't want to be fucked, dude. I want to live.
Stick to your pizza delivery bots.
I'll kill it with fire.
Yeah, because one of the concerns is is basically learning by reinforcement, where I said we learn every single outcome and stuff, but it not having a moral compass to say, all right, we could do this, but we probably shouldn't. A robot doesn't have that. Robots are basically little psychopaths. So, that you start training them to outthink us.
That's how we get Skynet. Nature is not cool. Do you want Skynet? This is how we get Skynet.
Exactly. And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
Hello, my name is Jay Patrick, and that is Adam.
Hello.
Join us for the Adam and JP Show.
Hello.
Available on iTunes and Stitcher Radio.
Hello.
Get it now.
Hello.
Oh, we're just kidding. If you love comics, video games, movies, wrestling.
Who doesn't? These are all great things that make us who we are.
That's true. Then you should join us for the Adam and JP Show. You actually can get it on iTunes and Stitcher Radio.
Yeah, that part was true.
And right here on the ESO Network.
And adamandjp.com.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News, where we're going to talk about movies. Yeah. And some TV shows that have gotten renewed as well. So with no further ado, we got Agent Carter to be renewed for season 3.
Yeah, I was worried about that one. I didn't think it was going to get picked back up, especially with the whatever Marvel's Most Wanted spinoff announced. I thought that was going to end up being a replacement for Carter.
Yeah, that was, I don't know. The first season was really good. The second season, with the added humor and stuff, just didn't quite have that same dynamic.
Yeah, it was funny, but it had just a total different feel to it.
And, so I was a little bit concerned myself because it's primarily gotten pretty low ratings.
And they left enough of a cliffhanger at the end of this season that if they didn't renew it, it was going to be kind of weird that they never got a chance to wrap up those, even if it was just maybe a, 2-hour TV movie, just so they could wrap up the cliffhangers that they left at the end of this season. So at least we may not get a fourth season, but at least they're going to be able to kind of tie up the loose ends.
Yeah. I mean, and to kind of put it in retrospect and to give some actual figures. So, for episodes 8 and 9, there were 2.5 million viewers, whereas that same time for last year's finale had over 4 million viewers. So, I don't know. I was a bit concerned after seeing some of the reviews. I do like the Agent Carter series, but I kind of wish they would go back to those roots of season 1. Yeah. And I think that, that will help with some of the ratings. And even with season 1, though, I mean, it still took, probably to episode 3 or 4 for me to really get invested and be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to stick through this.
It definitely had a different tone than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So it took some warming up, and then they completely kind of changed the whole feel of it for the season two. So it kind of had to, you kind of had to get back into it again.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I don't know. You know, maybe it was just a bad time for Agent Carter or something. I mean, you've still got S.H.I.E.L.D. in its prime, and you know, there's some really badass TV shows out there right now that are really going to give, you know, films a run for their money. So I think the studios need to be cautious of what's out there. And, you know, I don't know. It's just hard to introduce.
And that, whatever, six, however many episodes, what, 13 episodes, cuts into S.H.I.E.L.D. time. I mean, I would almost like seeing this get moved to a summer series so it doesn't cut back on the amount of S.H.I.E.L.D. we get and, you know, have it be its own thing, so there's not a 2 month gap in S.H.I.E.L.D. that I'm having to wait for it to come back to finish the season.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's the other thing. I mean, you know, with the success of AMC's The Walking Dead, with what you've got with the, you know, EW doing, you know, a lot of their films, you know, with Flash, Arrow, and, you know, then you've got Netflix coming out with, you know, the whole Daredevil series, and you know, there's so much happening now.
Yeah, that, and with all the CW spinoffs, they're going on simultaneously. They're not being kind of as a replacement show for the, you know, give it its own night instead of having to take up S.H.I.E.L.D.'s time spot, you know, for 2 months out of the year. Give it its own night. Let it have it be its own thing. Even exactly. If you're only going to run a 2 month series, like The Walking Dead or whatever it does, you know. Have it playing simultaneously. You have it. You, hell, give us a 2 hour thing. Give us S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, 8 to 9, 9 to 10. We get Carter. Yeah, if you want to keep it on the same nights, but yeah, it's kind of jacking up the time there in the middle. Just
yeah, absolutely
annoys me a little bit.
Yep, that's kind of my beef with it too. You know, I mean, I've got such a DVR backlog now that it's stupid. You know, just because there's so much good stuff, and I find my DVR. You know, I'm not watching that shit because I'm trying to catch what Netflix and Amazon and Hulu's doing with all of their own series. Like, there's so much out there that unless you're just an absolute couch potato, you're not going to have the time. So switching gears a little bit, more on par with what we've you know, talked about previously with the animated series. So Ben Affleck apparently is going to be teaming up with DC's Geoff Johns on a standalone Batman film. And
if that name sounds familiar to you, he's written a lot of the animated stuff. Plus, he was also involved in some of the writing of the, you know, Dark Knight Nolan Batman movies.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's done, you know, the comic books for, you know, the Green Lantern, Aquaman, you know, Justice League, The Flash, some of the Superman stuff. You know, also written, you know, the TV series, you know, Smallville, you know, Arrow, Flash, as well as, you know, some of the, you know, Supergirl project stuff for CBS. So he's definitely got cred. And I think this is something that we talked about, you know, wanting to see where, you know, the studios are teaming up with the actual writers and giving the writers, you know, the character developments and everything from that aspect, because I think that's one thing that Marvel has succeeded that DC just has been, you know, slow to follow.
And I got to say, you know, we've, like I said, you know, here at the end, we'll kind of give our spoiler-free review. I'm actually looking forward to a solo Batman film because of all the bad of Batman v Superman. Affleck's performance as Batman is the highlight of that movie for me. I mean, he is the diamond in the shit sandwich that is the rest of that movie.
The diamond in the rough. Batfleck.
Batman was Batfleck was the bomb in Phantoms, yo.
Yes. you know, another news article here. Fred
Armisen,
yeah, cast as Krang in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2. I was so excited when I saw Krang on the trailer.
So is he just voicing the character, or is his image used at all?
It looks like as of right now, let's see here.
I mean, is Krang going to be in a Fred Armisen robot? Because that would be weird.
Yeah, I right now it looks like it's going to be more of a vocal style role, more so than a.
It'll be interesting. I like him as a comedian actor. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting seeing his portrayal of Krang. I don't think he's ever been a bad guy.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Krang is such a difficult character to try to cast anyway. I mean, it just, I don't know. I mean, I'm just going to have to see it, and hopefully it doesn't suck. another trailer that we got, you know, the whole Lego franchise. Like, you know,
everything is awesome.
You know, whether it be, you know, some of the video games that have come out, whether it be some of the movies, you know. Everything is awesome. Pretty much everybody knows that damn song. Like,
it gets stuck in your head, man.
Absolutely. So I'm kind of you know, excited to see a Lego Batman movie.
Yeah, I've not watched any of the other Lego movies because I'm not 12 anymore. But I finally watched the Lego movie when it came out on video, and I gotta say I enjoyed it. And Lego Batman was probably one of the funniest parts of that movie. The guy who voices him, he's always been hilarious in anything he's been in. So, yeah, I'm kind of interested to see them giving him a full movie.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, we'll just have to see how the dynamic plays out and what it looks like. I don't know. You know, I don't know. I'm not necessarily opposed to it. Like, some of the games, like, you know, Star Wars Legos and stuff like that have been really badass. Like you said, the Lego movie, even though it's much more kid-oriented, it's still an enjoyable movie to watch. So, you know, I'm going to go into this and keep an open mind about it and just see what happens.
Because everything is awesome.
Because everything is awesome, except for the fact that we had Gary Shandling pass away at the age of 66.
That's a hell of a transition.
I got to pick up on a high note.
It's good.
You know, go down with a low note, and then we'll bring it right back up again. You know, you can't end on a negative. You just can't do it. And
yeah, Gary Shandling is probably a legendary comedic actor and comedian from way back.
Well, I mean, you got the Larry Sanders Show. You know, also made appearances in Iron Man 2 and Captain America: The Winter Soldier.
Yeah, his part in Iron Man it was hilarious. Yeah, Hail Hydra and all. Because he was such a dick in Iron Man 2, and then you find out in was it Civil War that he's Hydra. That just made that so much cooler.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, 2016, man, has really taken a lot of great actors, actresses, like comedians,
musicians,
like
everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, 2016 has not been a good year so far. So I'm really sad to see, you know, Gary's passing and everything. But I mean, there's a trailer on YouTube of just the scene, you know, from Winter Soldier where, you know, he does the whole, you know, whispers the Hail Hydra and stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, we can go back, relive the memories. I guess that's one of the beauties of YouTube and everything is, you know, so many of those great moments, we can just go back and I think they'll be timeless and classic. On a higher note, potentially, depending on how you want to look at this.
Right now.
Yeah. Arnold Schwarzenegger has confirmed that Terminator 6 is on the way.
Yes, I am coming back as the Terminator. Get to the chopper. Ah.
Yeah, I'm wondering if this franchise is ever going to die. But I don't know. I've been a big fan of most of the Terminator films. So, you know, to see another one, I'm still going to have to see it just for the sake that it's that iconic. But
I mean, if they use the CGI Arnold from Terminator Genesis, they might have a chance of making a good Arnold movie. But then again, I mean, if it's going, because I've not read anything about the story of it, but if it's a, you know, kind of a continuation of Genesis, it's potentially to be cool because they kind of, you know, explained why he's an old man.
Yes.
It made it believable. So, Alex, that movie had a lot of hate. You know, I didn't think it was that bad. So, I mean, I'll see it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're nerds. We've got to, right? I mean.
Nothing else so we can say it sucked on the podcast. Yes. It's hard to make fun of anything if you haven't seen it.
All right.
That's the only reason why I'll see Ghostbusters.
So, speaking of things that sucked, according to, I don't know, pretty much every review that I've read on.
Before we get into what sucks, let's talk about one more good thing. Since our last podcast, Daredevil season 2 was released. Like I said, we can't get too in depth in it because you're only at what, episode 3?
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of it. Based on the, I've tried to stay away from the interwebs, and you know, because I didn't want any spoilers. But as a big fan of the Punisher, like you know, and some of the feedback that I've received is this is very much the Punisher more so than it is a Daredevil.
Yeah, I got to say it. I burned through the whole thing and over the course of the weekend. I thought it was awesome. We'll get into a more in-depth review once you've seen the rest of it. But yeah, this could be called Punisher Season 1 instead of Daredevil Season 2. But yeah, that John Bernthal or whatever, that's a perfect Punisher. If they do a theatrical version of Punisher, he's got the role. I mean, well, he's in the MCU now, so if they do, they have to put him in the role pretty much.
Yes.
And I would watch that a full length. Even if they don't make another Punisher series, I would watch a Punisher feature-length film with him in it. It was amazing.
So that good, huh?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well. Like I said, we'll talk about it more once Brad's got around to watching the rest of it. So, okay, now let's get into the suck.
So, you know, we had the release of Batman vs. Superman, and we've been hating on this film pretty hardcore since about the first trailer, and it's like, well, what the fuck? They gave away the entire storyline. That doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense. Why do I want to see the film?
And we were correct in that interpretation. Because, yeah, pretty much I could have wrote that whole story based on what we saw in that trailer, and it was correct.
So, you had the pleasure or misfortune, ever how we want to view this. You know, let's jump into the bad, and then we'll touch base on the highlight of, you know, Ben Affleck actually pulling off a good Batman.
Like I said, I'm going to keep this review spoiler-free because when this comes out, it's going to be March 29th, my birthday, by the way. So it's not been out that long.
Happy fucking birthday.
So I don't want to get too spoilery. Like I said, we can get spoilery on a later episode once everyone else has had time to see it. So no spoiler alerts. I'm going to keep this one clean. Wasn't the best movie. Like I said, it wasn't Fantastic Four horrible. And it wasn't even Man of Steel horrible, which I hated that movie. It was a great one-hour movie. Unfortunately, it was 3 hours long.
So in that 3 hours, you know, what are the downsides? Was it just irrelevant information? Was it they were trying to do too much with character backgrounds or explaining like the story arc as to what's about to unfold? What?
Like I said, so without getting into spoilers, it's kind of all of those. With Marvel, we had 3 years between, or more than that. Iron Man came out in 2009, Avengers came out in, 2012? So there was time to build all those characters up in a solo film. So this movie, trying to build up the Justice League in one movie, there was an exorbitant amount of backstory to get to the Batman v Superman part. And a lot of it was just boring to watch. I mean, all the action is in that last hour and 20 minutes of the movie. And there's parts that make no sense whatsoever that just seem completely bizarre and unnecessary. And then there was characters that, like I said, the freaking whatever Eisenberg, Lex Luthor, I've liked him in other things. I'm a fan of his work, but he is a horrible Lex Luthor. He's just crazy. I mean, he's not intimidating, or you know, Lex Luthor has always been a genius, you know, strong, intimidating character, and this guy's just kind of a nutso nerd. And they never explain why he hates Superman. It's just, he just does. There's like I said, of all the unnecessary backstory.
It was a high school girlfriend falling out.
I mean, of all the unnecessary backstory stuff, they didn't give him any of that. You know, there's no rhyme or reason of why he's doing the things he's doing in this movie. Like I said, if they edited down this movie to a 90-minute movie, it could have been awesome. But like I said, there was just so much unnecessary bullshit added in there that it was like, I'm gonna take a nap until the the real movie starts.
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of been, you know, the overall feeling that I got, you know, in the show notes, I included a link for Sad Affleck, where basically it's him in front of a, you know, reporter and basically, you know, just playing all the horrible reviews and negative response that's been received so far.
Yeah, and I got to say, Affleck, because, I mean, I can understand why he's so disappointed in this, because I've seen interviews with him where this is to play Batman has been a lifelong dream of his. I mean, it's one of the reasons why he did the Daredevil movie, because it was the closest he could get to portraying Batman. You know, he's always wanted to play this role. And so the movie not doing that well or not being reviewed that well, I could see where he would take that personally.
But, you know, I think as far as his portrayal of Batman, I think that was done really good, you know, as far as what I've seen. It's, if this was a standalone Batman film, he probably would have absolutely killed it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing his solo work, because it's not a Batman origin story like we've seen in the past. This is a Batman who has been Batman for 20 years, it says, in the course of everything. So this is not rookie Batman. This is experienced Batman in his prime, which I think is much cooler than a Batman origin story. I mean, and this is probably the closest we get to seeing a live-action version of Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns.
So, I don't know. You know, that collaboration with him, with, you know, Geoff Johns, I think is going to be, you know, potentially that groundbreaking, you know, performance that we're really anticipating and looking for.
Yeah, Gal Gadot is awesome as Wonder Woman. I enjoyed her portrayal of it. Like I said, once we get to the Batman versus Superman part of the movie, that it really takes off. It's good. Like I said, if they had cut down all the backstory and got to the action much quicker. So I got to say, my final recommendation is it may not be worth seeing in theaters, but you should see it eventually. I mean, unless you absolutely have to see it on the big screen, wait till it comes out on video so you can jump forward to the good stuff. Because like I said, it's worth watching, but I it's not something I would get super excited about and see it opening weekend.
Well, I think that's a pretty fair, you know, synopsis. Any other news or highlights or anything that, you know, I haven't covered that you know, is floating around out there? Or?
Well, there is one little thing coming up in, about 2 more weeks. We are going to be at the Steampunk Symposium in Cincinnati, Ohio, doing a live version of the podcast and a cigar smoking panel. So if you are in the Ohio area or can get to the Ohio area, come on up and see us. And if you can't, we're going to try to record everything we do and probably release it as a podcast episode later on, so you'll at least see the craft we talked about. But if you're in the Ohio area, let us know. We'll come have a cigar with us. We'll drink some beers, talk about some steampunk shit. Be a good time.
Perfect. Well, with that, that will wrap up the show. Joe, do you want to tell the folks where they can find us, how to contact us, and all of that good stuff?
Also, if you've seen our Facebook page, we've got our confirmation letter that we get to be official media at DragonCon this year. So we're going to be recording interviews, hopefully, and roaming around in a official capacity at this year's DragonCon, not just our random drunken capacity that we normally do. So hopefully we'll generate some good stuff for the podcast during that time. We'll give you more details on that once we get closer to that and find out the details ourselves. Check us out on iTunes and Stitcher and our podcast page, CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're also members of the ESO Network. Check that out at ESOPodcast.com. Check out our Facebook page, our Twitter page, our Instagram page, at CigarNerdPod. And with that, I am Batman. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.